you know, the question everybody's asking is who's coming up? It looks like it's Biega and Guillaume Brisebois. And if that is indeed the case, what can you tell us about Guillaume Brisebois and how he's been looking so far this season?
He's been fine, I guess.
Right.
I think that's the right term. I think it's a matter of circumstances because, you know, obviously the Canucks have suffered some injuries, but Utica as well. You know, Sautner would probably have been the next option up, but he's been out with an ailment. So, and same with Chatfield as well. He's suffering through something as well. So that kind of, you know, you go further down the list and then you're looking at someone like Ole Ulevi or Guillaume Brisebois, and I think that the Canucks would be more interested in having Ole Ulevi play and have Brisebois be the one sitting up here out of the two if they had to make a choice. And I think that Ole Ulevi has a bit more, you know, ways to go before it can happen. So, you know, I think that Brisebois has played pretty well, has earned at least a look at this point. But, I at this point, it's just a matter of attrition. And we're kind of getting down to players where you're having to weigh the pros and cons of each one.
And I think given how long these guys are going to be out could determine when Ole Ulevi comes up. If you're looking at the way he's been playing so far and what a good time would be, I mean, how much longer do you think he should be in Utica? Or, you know, would it make sense to call him up here in the next week or so if Edler and Tanev are out long term?
I think he should probably be down in Utica for a while, longer at the very least. I think, you know, last week we talked about it as well. You know, if we're talking about December, January, then that's the time where we might see Ole Ulevi. But I think that even if he does spend the entire year in Utica, it's not the end of the world. Obviously, things can change based on what's happening here and in Utica on injuries and who's left, and that may expedite things. But at this point, I think that, you know, it's okay for to leave him down there specifically to keep doing his thing and keep working on the things he needs to work on.
I mean, the question then that some people might be asking is well, why not? Because Ulevi, points-wise, leads the Comets defenseman in scoring. He's one of the top AHL defensemen rookies in scoring, 6 points in 9 games. They look at that and think, well, if he can do that with the Comets, maybe he can help out the blue line produce a little bit of offense here in Vancouver.
Yeah, I think it's more of he's benefiting from the fact that he's been playing on the first power play unit. You know, he was the mainstay on there yesterday when they played. And despite going through injuries, it's still a pretty good group. And before that, you know, Reid Boucher was scoring on pretty much every shot he was taking. And Ole Ulevi was benefiting from the fact of being that the power play, you know, quarterback for that group. So, you know, I don't think the points are indicative to the play that he has been playing. That's not to say he's been playing poorly or anything. I think that, you know, he has been making good strides and is looking better with each passing game. But I think, you know, if you look just specifically at the points, that's, you know, I don't think that's a clear representation of his play.
Guillaume Brisebois, if he is indeed coming, what's the book on him right now? Because his skating has stood out to me watching him in training camp and in preseason, but obviously didn't do enough of anything to warrant a spot on opening night. So what does he look like to you in the opening few weeks of the AHL season?
You know, he just kind of does what he does well, is he's a really good, you know, player to move the puck out of the zone. He's very safe responsibly defensively as well. He's more willing to, you know, retreat from the blue line instead of being aggressive on pinches. He does have the ability to move the puck well and pass the puck to his forwards and strides, which I think, you know, the Canucks have struggled with that when it comes to their you know, transition game is coming out of the zone and getting the puck to their forwards. And a lot of that responsibility is on the forwards, but also to the defenseman. And I think that if he's what does get into the lineup, that is something that he is pretty good at, is, you know, eluding coverage and then getting the puck to his forwards to get, you know, break out from there. He doesn't show a willingness to jump into the rush too often, but when he does have a pretty good, you know, wrist and snap shot to get the puck to the net and make things happen that way.
We're talking to Ryan Beach here on Sportsnet 650 about Canucks prospects. And, you know, when we start looking at this team in general and how these young guys are performing up here in Vancouver, and obviously Bo Horvat's a guy that we talked about for years, Ryan, especially with his growth and the expectation for him, for the player that he was supposed to be, a third-line center. Now he's exceeding those expectations. At this point, should we just avoid putting any sort of ceiling on Bo Horvat, considering how he's been growing every year?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I think he's one of those players that have exceeded expectations, you know, what I'm trying to say is that he had pretty reasonable expectations of what player he was going to be based on the information available at the time the Canucks drafted him. And he's exceeded all of those expectations and more. So, you know, when people were saying that he would only ever be a third line center, they were pointing to his defensive game as being the hallmark. And, you know, maybe he has limited offensive upside. When now that he's been in the NHL for a few years, it's actually more of the flip side. His offensive game has really stood out, and he's been struggling when it comes to defensively in terms of shot differential and things like that. So it is definitely interesting to see that how Horvat has changed his game and how that ceiling has kind of adapted from there. And, you know, I think that everybody still points to the fact that, you know, on a championship team, he's probably still a really good second line center. I don't anticipate him being a first line center. But right now, with Horvat and the eventual return of Pettersson, I think that's a pretty good 1-2 punch for a rebuilding team.
Now, obviously, you mentioned, yeah, Pettersson and Horvat, your center position is fine. And we know Brock Besser, when he's right, he's fine as an elite winger potentially as well. Now, when it comes to the other wingers on this team, especially the young guys, we see some good things from Goldobin, but, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag here and there with him. How would you view the overall depth on the wing when it comes to the players in the NHL that could maybe be top six guys and other players that may have down in Utica and the minors elsewhere too? Like, do they need more depth when it comes to scoring wingers here?
Yes, they absolutely do. You know, I think that the only player that you could probably say is going to be an NHLer would be Jonathan Dahlin, and that's just saying, you know, I think because of his versatility as a player and his skating and his offensive awareness, that he can kind of go up and down the lineup anywhere, and that gives him kind of a head start on, you know, carving out some sort of role in the NHL. So that's why I say, you know, he's probably the most sure bet of being an NHL player out of that group. After that, you're getting into a lot of question marks from there. So, you know, if you talk about someone like Zach MacEwen, what's his overall ceiling? You know, he's done really well and he made really good strides in Utica, but is he going to be able to get that same opportunity in the NHL? I wouldn't think so. I think he may be able to carve out a role as a, you know, a bottom winger, but that doesn't solve the problems that they need. And then, you know, you go into players like Cole Lynn and Joni Gadjevic, and, you know, Cole Lynn has adapted pretty well to the AHL so far this year. You know, if you look at his first game compared to his last game prior to being injured, he was a noticeably more impactful player at the AHL level, but he hasn't been that on a game-to-game basis. And as much as, you know, myself and many people like Cole Lynn as a prospect and as a player, you know, statistically, players of his ilk and scoring prowess and things like that, the history shows that it's still only a 50-50 shot of them being an NHL player. And if they do, it's not generally going to be a top-line, you know, impact winger that the Canucks so desperately need. So I think you're right that, you know, we have Besser and Goldobin showing good things, but then who's going to be the other two wingers in that group? I would assume that the long-term plan is Jonathan Dahlin to, you know, saddle up with his buddy Elias Pettersson and then hope to find a diamond in the rough. But otherwise, they definitely need at least one or two other guys to slide in there if they have any chance of continuing an upwards ascension.
Does Zach MacEwen's early development remind you a little bit about Bo Horvat? Not so much with the offensive output, but the fact that his weaknesses and his flaws are something that he works on so tirelessly, right? His skating took a big step over the past summer here, and he's now a point per game guy with the Comets this season, 9 points, 9 games, and a guy that this organization still believes has a little bit more offensive upside to his game than what we've seen already.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm working on a piece for The Athletic later today that's going to kind of talk about I know that there's been a lot of discourse and discussion about how the kids have played in Utica so far this year, so I'm kind of going to break down all the things. And mm-hmm. And one of the players that I'm kind of pointing to where, you know, playing the vets idea was successful with Zach MacEwen, you know, last year, came in as a rookie into the AHL. You could tell he was a raw player, but there were some tools there that were encouraging. He made really good strides by the end of the year. He was a player that they just couldn't take out of the lineup. And again, this year, he's made even larger strides. And as you said, his skating seems to be improved. His willingness to, you know, be in on the forecheck and be physical seems to have taken another step up. His ability to distribute the puck is really well. And also, he kind of accepts the role that he's been given on the power play. Go to the front of the net and do your thing, and he does it really well. So I think that, you know, for MacEwen, he's exactly the kind of player that you hope for when you're getting those type of players in terms of development, and someone that the rest of the prospects can look at as someone for kind of inspiration.
Ryan, is it an easy decision for you to send Adam Gaudette back to Utica should Pettersson and Horvat be ready to go? Besser and Pettersson be ready to go? Because a young player, obviously a rookie, but he's only averaging less than 10 minutes a game right now.
Yeah, it's definitely that balance between trying to get these players as much minutes as possible and also trying to dress the best lineup possible, you know, every single night. So on that one side, you know, if I had to make the decision of who would be the best 12 forwards, even with those two guys returning, I'd probably put Adam Gaudette as my fourth line center and move Granlund either to the wing or as a healthy scratch. But looking at the long-term outlook, sending Gaudette back down to the minors, I don't think is a problem. You know, just like the Canucks, the Comets have been ravaged by injury. So if Gaudette goes down there, he's going to be a first or second line center. He's going to get power play time. He's going to do all those things and play 20 minutes a game so that, you know, later in the year, if there are more injuries in the center spot, or, you know, let's say they make a move and make a trade to trade a center for a winger or something like that, then he can come in and hopefully hit the ground running. So it's always that delicate balance between the two is, you know, how do you win tonight and how are you going to win in a month or two or next year or the year after that? So in that vein, I think that the Canucks are going to be patient with players like Gaudette, and we may see him go down, but that shouldn't be viewed as him being a poor player in the handful of games he's played. It's more thinking about the long-term picture rather than, you know, Saturday night's game against Pittsburgh and so on.
Before I let you go, Ryan, and, you know, we talked about Pettersson, we talked about Horvat. It looks like the Canucks have their number one and second line center figured out long-term, and the third line center, if Gaudette can be a guy, that seems like it's the makings of a decent trio down the middle looks like it's working. But the question is, with next year's draft, the Canucks could be picking anywhere from the top 10, and who knows how good they are this season. But when you look at the biggest need being defense still on this team, and the fact that outside of Ylevi and Hughes, they don't really have any defensemen coming up who are projecting to be puck-moving, point-producing defensemen, how critical will it be this year in this year's draft, wherever the Canucks pick, to find that another puck-moving defenseman?
I think it's critical, but I also think it's important to get an offensive scoring winger as well to supplement the group. Mm-hmm. You know, last year the Canucks were in a fortuitous situation where, you know, they were in dire need of a puck-moving defenseman, and there was quite a few within that grouping of where they landed, and they, you know, they got the player they wanted in Quinton Hughes. With this year, I think the argument can be made at the very center-heavy draft led by Jack Hughes. And then you have Dylan Cousins with the Hurricanes, Lethbridge Hurricanes. You've got Kirby Dach with the Saskatoon Blades, Lavoie with the Moosehead, Turcotte with the U.S. MVP. Like, there's a lot of centers within that group. So, you know, that doesn't really fit into where the Canucks desperately need. And that's not to say that if they do land in that spot that they should pass on a center. But I think that, you know, just the way that the draft class is shaking out, it's going to be really center heavy with, you know, Kaapo Kakko as being the winger in that mix, who I think is pushing himself up to second overall pretty firmly on his own. And then Bowen Byram here with the Giants as being the defender within that group. The only downside with Bowen Byram is that he is left-handed, and the Canucks are pretty, you know, if we're, you know, taking the Canucks prospect pool into a vacuum and saying which are they stronger on, I think you can say they're stronger noticeably on the left-hand side, with Hughes and Ylevi probably making up the top two spots for the foreseeable future. So then Bowen Byram, is he your third pairing guy? Mm-hmm. Or do you shift him to the right side, which he has played at times this year, although he kind of just never leaves the ice. So
right.
Say he's playing the right side probably isn't fair. He just never leaves the ice, so he's just kind of all over the place. So yeah, so I think it's a combination of they do need to kind of get some more scoring wingers on that side, get some high-end scoring wingers, and then also supplement that right side defensive group, because at this point I think it's really just kind of Jet Wu as being the one that you can feel comfortable projecting having an NHL career. The other ones, you know, have a lot more question marks. And that isn't to say that Wu is a sure bet, because as we talked about, you know,
yep,
there never is a sure bet with prospects, but I think Wu is the leader of that group given his the way he plays.
Well, and that's the thing about this year's draft. I mean, if the Canucks are picking again outside the top seven, maybe it works out for them too to get a highly ranked scoring winger a bit later on, because we've seen in the past few drafts, Ryan, how wingers are going down a bit, centers and defensemen are leaping over them, so maybe it works out for the Canucks. And I know the draft is 8 months away still. Things can change so much. But Viking Stat is asking this question for you. If you had to pick today, Byram or Kakko?
Oh, hands down, Kakko. I think that what he's doing in the Liga this year, we're probably witnessing something we haven't seen since Alexander Barkov. And we know how dominant he is, despite him being pretty underrated in the center spot for the Florida Panthers. I think that if Kakko keeps doing his thing, I think he's the perfect fit for someone like Pettersson on the right side, throw Dahlin on the left side, and then I think you can arguably say you got your first line for the next decade, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, if I'm having to choose between those two in the number two spot, it's going to be Kakko. I think that someone like Byram may actually probably land in the 5, 6, 7 spot at this point.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to keep an eye on. We're still a long way away from the draft, but it's always fun to take a look ahead as well. Always a pleasure, Ryan. We look forward to talking to you every Thursday. You can check him out on The Athletic, of course, Sportsnet 650, and also on Twitter at Ryan Beach.
Sportsnet 650.